The Destiny Thief. As a writer, you aren't anybody until you become somebody. James Salter. I am the same man I was when I was a struggling nobody. Still a writer, trying to find his way through a maze. Should I be anything else? Raymond Chandler. Some time ago, I had a lengthy telephone conversation with a man I'll call David. I'd known him nearly 40 years earlier at the University of Arizona, where we shared a fiction workshop taught by the writer Robert C.S. Downs, who encouraged both of us, but David especially. At the time, I was finishing up my Ph.D. in American literature, so when I asked Downs about taking the workshop, I assumed he would put me in the graduate level one, but he didn't. My prose, he explained, was full of jargon and intellectual pretension. Most writers had about 1,000 pages of shitty prose in them, he went on, and these had to be expelled before they can hope to write seriously. In your case, he added, make it 2,000. And so, pushing 30, I swallowed my pride and enrolled in a workshop full of 20-year-olds, many of whom were better writers than I was. David was working on a novel about a rock and roll band, and having once played in a band myself, I was envious of both his subject matter and his bold talent, and even more jealous of the fact that at age 20, he'd already figured out what he wanted to do with his life, whereas I had wasted the better part of a decade pursuing an advanced degree I no longer really wanted. What I didn't know about David was what a rough time he was having outside the classroom. His mother, whom he had dearly loved, had recently died of cancer, and his father was an emotional tyrant. David himself had very little money and was drinking heavily. Indeed, the fiction workshop, his dream of becoming a novelist one day, was just about all that was holding him together. Then, near the end of the semester, he got in trouble, courtesy of his poet girlfriend. She'd been assigned 6 poems, and the day before they were due, she hadn't written a single line. When she told David she was thinking about dropping the course, he said, "Nonsense. We'll write them now. How hard can it be?" So they sat down and did just that. The girlfriend writing 3 poems, David the other 3. They both thought that the results were pretty good, but the girlfriend was unprepared for the praise lavished on the poems, in particular the one David had written about his mother. After class, she made the mistake of confiding to a classmate that all of the poems had been written the night before, half of them by her boyfriend. When her friend reported the infraction, both she and David were hauled before Downs, the director of creative writing, to explain themselves. The girlfriend arrived at the meeting, determined to defend the work as her own. David, they agreed beforehand, would admit only to offering advice. But this wasn't Downs's first experience with academic dishonesty, and instead of asking if she had written the poems in question, he quoted the best line from the whole batch of poems and asked if she had written it. She immediately broke down. Since she had come clean and this was her first offense, Downs said he would recommend a D in the course, but no mark on her record. He then turned to his star fiction writer and said, "Good poems." David sighed, accepting the compliment, proud to have written the line that his mentor so admired, but fearful of what came next. The dishonesty charge was the least of it, he confessed. He was out of money and about to be evicted from the shithole where he was living. He had dropped the rest of his courses earlier in the term, and though he hated the idea, there was nothing to do but return home in defeat. He hadn't intended to tell Downs all of this, but there he was, spilling his guts about how much the workshop meant to him and how much he hated the idea of not completing it. When he asked what his grade would be, Downs said that he would be getting the A he'd earned, and added, perhaps to bolster his spirits, that it would likely be the